The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning. It's just heading towards 5 minutes past nine on this Wednesday, the 13th of December. No, it's not. It's September 2023. How are you all keeping? I do hope you're very well indeed. And unlike me, you know which month it is. Anyway, we're here for you, with you for sure for the next 3 hours. We want you on board. 086 60 25000, WhatsApps and texts. You've kept us really busy all week on our phone lines. Please keep that up. If you're outside the Republic, get involved in the conversation as well. 00353 86 60 25000. If you want to call us, 074 91 25000. Again, from Derry to Rome, wherever you're listening, 00353 749125000. Again, we're inviting you to get involved in the conversation. And if email is your thing, comments@highlandradio.com. And you can also watch the show daily here with us. Go on to YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland. Like and subscribe there. Maybe even hit the bell. And we can be watched on your smart TV, your Fire Stick, and across your mobile devices. And we're across Facebook pages as well. Right. Let's see what's happening on the front of the newspapers. Let's start with the Inish Times. An agriculture minister and Donegal TD, Charlie McConnellogue, has called for more urgency in the approval of applications to the new defective blocks remediation scheme. The minister has called for more urgency in the approval of applications to the new scheme, which opened in July, and has called on Donegal County Council's MICA Redress Committee to meet and consider holding public meetings or seminars on the new scheme. Are they not already doing that? His call for public meetings comes after the first of a His calls for public meetings comes after the first of a series of public meetings around the county hosted by the MICA Action Group. It was held in Malinhead on Monday night. I look forward to councillors on a cross-party basis coming together through the Donegal County Council MICA Committee to ensure that the necessary steps are actioned by the County Council so that all homeowners awaiting approval are urgently transitioned to the new scheme, he said. But that being said, in terms of moving people from the old scheme to the new scheme, the council themselves say, with the staff that they have and the processes that are involved, they're going as quick as they can, but it does understandably take time. The Donegal Post this morning, there was a distinction for Donegal last week with the introduction of the county's first postal e-trike by Unposten Bundoran. And the first man to put the pedal on the metal was Alan Patton from Bundoran, although Letterkenny will follow suit shortly, a spokesperson for Unpost also confirmed. It's part of a continued rollout that has taken place across the country since late 2019, but this has been its first appearance on Donegal soil, delayed, no doubt, by the COVID-19 pandemic that struck the following year. With the Unpush bikes previously, you could argue in terms of a green perspective that it's gone backwards if they were already on push bikes, because obviously they are completely green, whereas an electric bike is not. Anyway, but anyway, be that as it may. On to the Irish Times now. Sinn Féin has branded Taoiseach Micheál Martin as desperate following his criticism of the party at the Fianna Fáil think-in on Monday. Mr Martin told reporters on Monday that Sinn Féin's triumphalism around atrocities committed by the Provisional IRA was infecting younger voters, comments which Sinn Féin's housing spokesperson Eoin Óibrín totally dismissed as desperate. He said the remarks were ill-judged, patronising and insulting. I don't think he's anything positive to offer young people on housing and healthcare, on childcare, and therefore increasingly so much of his commentary is negative, he said, arguing Sinn Féin had positive alternatives. Mr Martin said that Sinn Féin had been very slow to bring closure to victims of provisional IRA violence. They still try to triumphalise it. They still try to justify it. The problem with that is that you're reinfecting a new generation of young people, the Taoiseach has said, which I think is not really giving young people the credit they deserve for thinking for themselves and considering all options. All that being said, Sinn Féin is still open to a coalition with Fianna Fáil. So obviously pre-election, they're toing and froing, backward and forthing. But what do you feel? Like, say, for instance, you go to the ballot box and Sinn Féin may well enter a coalition with Fianna Fáil. That's if the current government parties can't make up their own numbers. How would you feel if a vote for Sinn Féin ensured that Fianna Fáil remained in government? Is that something that you would be open to? Is that something you might consider when going to the ballot box? Let us know, because this conversation is going to be happening as the election edges closer. But the way proportional representation and coalition works, theoretically, if Sinn Féin aren't ruling out a coalition with Fianna Fáil, and arguably why would they, your vote for Sinn Féin could mean returning Fianna Fáil into government. As I say, text and let us know what you think about that proposition. The Irish Independent is amongst a lot of papers that have a lot of coverage about RTE. RTE is coming under mounting government pressure to look at selling off its Montrose campus in Dublin 4 as part of a radical cost-cutting measure, with the financial-stricken broadcaster potentially needing a bailout of upwards of 50 million. Senior coalition figures believe RTE bosses should now examine selling off part or all of its Donnybrook home. A senior government source said RTE would now be asked about selling off Montrose in discussions around its future financing, with Director General Kevin Backhurst expected to produce a cost-cutting plan next month. The senior source questioned how many staff actually worked on site after COVID and noted the sale would raise substantial funds, potentially hundreds of millions of euro, to address its financial crisis. But that would be a temporary fix. I think they could probably, if they sold all, raise 300 million. Then, of course, they'd have to invest tens of millions in terms of providing new accommodation. How much would they be left with? Would it really make a difference as to, like, I don't think people aren't paying their TV licence because RTE aren't selling land at Montrose. And the Irish Daily Mail tells us that RTE has suffered its biggest fall in TV licence payments of just under 1 million in 1 week, as its executives face more grillings by politicians in Leinster House today. And it'll be really interesting to see the tone of questioning from the committee, because, you know, the public have spoken here. I don't think for a long time, I can't recall something similar whereby there has been this, not organised, this is not an organised situation. There's no groups or parties or individuals or Facebook saying don't pay your TV licence. Right across this country, there are thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people saying, I don't like the way that place is run and I'm not supporting it with my hard-earned cash. It's happening naturally. And I really don't think it's, I don't really think it's an action that can be ignored. I think it's really important that the Oireachtas Committee and the government say, well, the people are speaking, the public who pay their wages are speaking really strongly here. And they're saying there's something seriously amiss, that they're not going to pay their TV license and support this organisation. And I don't really feel that that action by the public is being given the credit or the recognition that it deserves in terms of how things move forward. It really is huge. You know, up in terms of value, almost €1 million in 1 week withheld by the public for that organisation. I mean, that's really, really significant. Well, licence fee sales dropped by 982,000 in the first week of September, with the national broadcaster now left reeling from 11 weeks of controversy since the hidden payment scandal broke. RTE Director General Kevin Backhurst will appear before the Oireachtas Media Committee today for questions after the committee received 179 documents from Montrose for investigation. But in terms of, by the way, in case you're not aware, do you remember there was this big talk of, well, we want to know what the top 100 are earning? You're not going to find that out because GDPR. And what other information will also be withheld? Who is to say? On to the Irish Daily Star now, and it has been confirmed that the use of body-worn cameras by Gardaí has the potential to transform policing in Ireland, a senior officer has said. Chief Superintendent Derek Smart was commenting on the Garda commenced a public procurement process for the cameras. Now, I looked quite detailed into this, and there's not an awful lot to suggest on an international scale that this would actually make the difference. And I also note too, in a few videos that I've seen of American police people, that if when things get controversial, they can actually turn them off when it doesn't suit them. You know, I've seen the videos of them where things have got a little bit hairy and the cameras accidentally gets switched off, and then you have to prove, did they get switched off in a struggle? Did they get switched off on purpose? It's not perfect, and as I say, there's not an awful lot of international evidence, and I'm not opposed to them, by the way. There's not an awful international evidence to suggest that they can transform policing. But anyway, it's intended that a live operational pilot of the body-worn cameras will start in mid-24 with a full rollout in 2025. Garda have confirmed the small lightweight cameras worn by Garda members will not record all the time and will still be turned on amid incidents. So what you would see internationally is the police are rolling around in their squad car, they pull someone over, and as they get out of the car, they switch it on. But as I say, I've seen an awful lot of videos of them when the going gets a wee bit, you know yourself, switching them off. So it'll be interesting to see how that's covered to ensure that it doesn't disadvantage the public. On to the Irish Sun. Global outcast Kim Jong-un arrived in neighbouring Russia. If the truth be told, would you have known that someone in North Korea could go on a train to Russia? I wouldn't have known that, but anyway, he did. He went on his armoured train. Global outcast Kim Jong-un arrived in neighbouring Russia for an arms deal yesterday as Vladimir Putin accused Britain of risking a nuclear conflict. The North Korean despot rumbled over the border on his armoured train for talks on trading tanks and shells for Russian rocket tech, but a Western general dismissed the meeting, which could see Moscow provided with hardware for the war in Ukraine as a coalition of the desperate. And very finally, on to the Irish Daily Mirror this morning. Two Ukrainian refugees have appeared in court accused of operating an illegal cigarette business. The pair were caught with more than 8,000 counterfeit smokes and 5,395 euro in cash when swooped on by Gardaí and Letterkenny. Roman Nosenko and Mikhailo Shria were selling the cheap cigarettes from the back of a Ukrainian registered vehicle at Pierce Road, Letterkenny, on August 22nd. Not the brightest sparks, perhaps, quite public there. The cigarettes had no valid tax stamps affixed. Gardaí took possession of the cigarettes and the cash. Sergeant Jim Collins said both men were cooperative during interview and admitted their part in the scam. They were aided by an interpreter when appeared at Letterkenny District Court before Judge Aidan Cunningham. Nosenko, a 42-year-old of Atlantic Way Apartments Bundoran, and 39-year-old Shriaha of the same address, pleaded guilty. Judge Cunningham directed a probation and welfare report be prepared in the case of each man and adjourned the cases until December the 11th. Okay. A fundraising committee and a main fundraising initiative will be set up in the coming weeks as FinnHarps looks to address a significant funding shortfall for the development of the Donegal Community Stadium in Stranorlar, as rising costs have taken the cost to £7.3 million. FinnHarps need to raise £700,000 for work to resume on their long-delayed new stadium, as I mentioned, in Stranorlar. Ian Harkin is president of FinnHarps and is with us now. Good morning, Ian.
Good morning, Greg. Thank you very much for having me on.
So what has happened to leave us in this position now, Ian?
Well, so the saga of the stadium has been going on for a number of years, but it's we're reaching the end point right now, Greg, which is really good. It's last year we applied for funding to complete the stadium, and we received final confirmation of those government funds in June of this year, and that was to a costing of $5.7 million at the time. Now inflationary costs have driven that up to $7.3 million, and we've been asked by the government to seek additional funds to cover that, which we've applied for $1.1 million from them. Now the only caveat that they've given to us so far on that additional funding is that they need to see proof of us, of our own funds. And to date, we've, in terms of those activities, we've secured $500,000 from the council, we've secured $500,000 from the FAI, and to cash flow, they're going to be paying that to us over the next 10 years. And to cash flow that, we've got a loan in place to cover that $1 million. And now we also have gone and obtained a facility from our builder for $500,000. It's one of the subcontractors, actually, but he's doing the vast majority of the work on the stadium. So we've got a half a million facility in with him, which leaves us with 700,000 that we need to raise ourselves in the immediate term. So we're in a really good place. The government has supported us. The local council has supported us. The FEI has supported us. We're going to be developing a stadium that is going to be an asset to the whole of Donegal. It's going to, you know, the match night entertainment, the quality of the product that we're going to be able to deliver on a Friday night is going to, you know, improve massively. Like at the moment, there's only cover on one side of our stadium at the moment in Finn Park. And this will deliver, you know, a night comparable to anything really that you can get in the UK or any other country for that matter. We'll have, you know, the full match night experience from food to music to the football itself.
How do you insulate yourself from further rising costs? Because even just in terms of concrete, it's gone up significantly, not least because of a government levy, which is being applied to it now, which I'm sure is applicable to this project. So what's the time frame? Because, you know, this process has to work really quickly, does it not? Because otherwise, you know, by the time you are ready to start, costs will have inflated again.
Yeah, well, good point in that. And one of the main things that we're doing to address that is that the fact that we've actually chosen a model that is, it's a modular build. So it's quite a rapid construction process. So once we've sat down now and agreed costs with our suppliers, that the build time scale is very, very short. The vast majority of the physical build will be done in a very short period of time.
And what I presume, you know, there is there was a request made for the FAI or the council to dig a little deeper.
Well, from the conversations that we've had with them, it's they've said that, you know, that's as much as they're going to give to us. I'm sure, you know, we'll continue to speak with them to see if they can match their proportionate share of the increases as well. But, you know, at this stage now, it's down to ourselves. We've got to start that fundraising process and get it kicked off. I think, you know, people throughout Donegal, both, you know, people living in Donegal and living abroad, they see this. We've been going out, you know, this last year and communicating with people and groups, and they, you know, they appreciate what we're doing. They appreciate what we're building for the people of Donegal. It is a legacy project, and it is serving the, you know, we are a fan-owned club. We're not, you know, you're not lining the pockets of some multimillionaire or whatever by building this asset. It's for the people of Donegal. And it will be here for a very long period of time. So we will be going out and asking people to help us to support this project.
No, between the ever-present loyal fans, if this is bought into as a Donegal-wide project, which I know you're working very hard to do so, and of course the generosity of the diaspora can be tapped into, many with strong connections to either the county or the club itself, and maybe recognising the work it does too in our schools and things like that. If you get enough of a buy-in, 700,000 euro, as much as it is, begins to seem quite achievable.
It is, yeah. I mean, on an annual basis at the moment, if you work it out, if we were to get... One of the things that we've applied for with this project as well is because we are building infrastructure, you're able to get tax benefits on donations, which hopefully, you know, the donors will donate those tax benefits back to the club. Say someone donates 1,000 euros, we will be able to obtain another 400 euros back on that from the government on a tax rebate for the infrastructure. So it's anybody who donates over 250 euros, we can claim the tax back on that. There's just a small form that we need to fill out for that. No. But it's a great incentive as well for
people. Indeed. Yeah, indeed. And people don't do that enough, and an awful lot of money is lost to charities for that very reason, because there's not a huge awareness of that. So, Ian, what is the... obviously there's going to be things being launched in the near future. Is there a marquee fundraising drive? Is it a series of smaller ones? Or how much can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, at the moment, we're just forming our committee. We have a number of different ideas. All of them, you know, there will be one main project, which will be launched pre-Christmas. And it will be, you know, the main event to drive the vast majority of the funds for it. We're trying to tie in this tax element to it as well to, you know, further boost the fundraising efforts. But, you know, we've got a number of different things that we have run within the club, from our lottos and our 500 club as well. So we know that we have that base out there. But, you know, this project is not just for our fan base. It's for everybody in Donegal. You know, I've been in this role for just about a year and a half or so, and it's amazing to meet the amount of families, you know, right across the whole county of Donegal that have, in recent times, more so than anything else, had interactions with the club. And that's because of the work that our academy does. We've over 200 kids every year in our academy, which affects pretty much every family or every little village. Everybody will know somebody who has benefited from the club. But we don't have, you know, our current stadium. We're getting pressure from the FAI. We're getting derogations every year on our current stadium because it's not fit for purpose. And we've been asked to raise our stadium up to a Category 3 level, and it's physically not possible to do that with Finn Park.
Yeah, of course, and the stadium has to match the club's ambitions as well, doesn't it, to going into the future. So, Ian, just once again, timeline this for us. You're saying that all the funding is in place, so once how much money is raised, can we actually start seeing work start on this? So what do you see as a realistic time frame for this stadium beginning construction, if all goes well?
Yeah,
or continuing construction, I suppose you could say.
Yeah, I mean, we can actually start work right now. As long as the government see that we are starting our fundraising efforts, we can start the project right now. But as a club, there's a couple of different legal processes that we're in the midst of doing. Our lease is run below 15 years, so it's currently in front of the council this year to extend that out to 30 years again. And once that's done, there has to be a legal charge put onto the new lease. So again, those things just take weeks, if not maybe a month or so, to complete. But we have committed as a board to start work as soon as we reach the 500,000 mark in our fundraising efforts. And, you know, we believe that that's very achievable by the plans that we currently have.
And is there, like, rights, not that it might be worth 500,000 euro, but are things like sort of the naming of the stadium, a long-time tie-in, is that... Are those options on the table, or is it, you know, say three or an hour or whatever it might be?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we've reached out to a number of different agencies in Ireland who do that particular type of activity in terms of naming rights. Mm. If you look at other clubs in Ireland, Drogheda have done it, Longford Town have also done it, and on the occasion when Drogheda have done it, I believe the amount they have reached is somewhere in around the 100,000 euro mark per annum. So it's a significant one if we can get big partners, big players,
both in Donegal and with very strong Donegal connections that could have their quite literally their name all over this project. Okay, Ian, listen. Obviously, between these channels and the sports team as well, I'm sure we'll hear much more about it as plans are finalised for this fundraising drive. But you see this as a good point. This is the project ready to go. Once this money begins to be raised and hopefully people will be generous. Is that the parting shot?
That's it, Greg. Yeah, I mean, just keep an eye out. We will be announcing it very, very soon. So, dig deep when the call comes out. I mean, it's a fantastic... I mean, even what we have at the moment, it's a fantastic night out for families. We are building that towards a family night out, a family... occasion to gather together, and we hope to be able to deliver the asset to allow for that. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much indeed, Ian Harkin.
Watch the show live now on YouTube, Facebook, and at HighlandRadio.com. The 9 till noon show is brought to you by Letterkenny Credit Union, with monster loans available up to €60,000 for all occasions. Visit letterkennycu.ie.
Every time you step outside your house, the choices you make count. And every day you go to work, how you get there counts. By choosing to take public transport or to walk or cycle to work whenever you can, you're doing your bit to help reduce Ireland's transport emissions. It's why €563 million has been allocated for bus and rail services around the country this year. Because wherever you're going, your journey counts. Visit gov.ie/yourjourneycounts. Brought to you by the Government of Ireland.
Hi, Paddy here at Shane Connolly Cars in Donegal Town. Are you looking to upgrade your car? With Shane Connolly Cars, you'll find makes and models for every budget. Great finance options, and we also accept trade-ins. Check out shaneconnollycars.com or call on to us at Shane Connolly Cars from Lonagher Road, Donegal Town.
Sit back, relax, and sink into the comfort of a new sofa. Available now at the Easy Living Furniture Spectacular Sofa Sale. With interest-free finance options on a wide range of sofas that are in stock and ready for delivery. Now is the perfect time to treat yourself and invest in comfort, style, and superb value for money. The Spectacular Sofa Sale is now on in Easy Living Furniture, Crescent Link Retail Park.
Ormacullagh Jewellers in Letterkenny are synonymous with fine jewellery, quality watches and giftware. With stores at Main Street, Letterkenny and the Letterkenny Shopping Centre or online at ormacullagh.com. You can choose from their quality product range in a relaxed atmosphere. And their sales staff will be happy to help you make the right choice, whatever the occasion. Ormacullagh Jewellers, making moments magical for generations.
Experience an unforgettable night with the Tumblin' Paddies as they launch their new album at the Mount Errigal Hotel on Saturday, September 16th. Doors open at 9 p.m. with DJ Kieran Cannon. The Tumblin' Paddies will be on stage from 10 p.m. till midnight. Don't miss this massive night of entertainment with the Tumblin' Paddies at the Mount Errigal Hotel. Tickets on Eventbrite or pay at the door.
Okay, so as you would know, new rules were brought in recently as it relates to, walking dogs on certain beaches when you can and, I suppose, more importantly, when you can't. And then we heard yesterday from Ungata Siakana reminding people to keep your dogs on the leash or at least keep them under control. This off the back of a couple of complaints of people being attacked, you could say, or at least jumped on by dogs, I believe, in the Milford area. Sinead joins us on the programme now. Hi, Sinead.
Hiya, Greg.
It's an interesting one, this, because I remember sort of stating at the time when we were talking about dogs being banned from blue flag beaches and all that type of stuff. I mean, if you were a dog owner, Donegal wouldn't feel really like a very friendly place to go, even though it's an absolute minority of people that are irresponsible dog owners. What's your view?
I don't want to make out as if, you know, there's no concern there for people who are genuinely scared of dogs. I mean, I have quite an irrational phobia about a certain eight-legged creature, so I completely get it. I just can't stand it. However, if we're calling for dogs to be on leash at all times, there needs to be a plan put in place where dogs can go to specific places where they can be off leash. Dogs need to socialise. Dogs need to be able to, and my dog is a Cocker Spaniel. She needs to be able to run. She needs to be able to run off leash to get out of the energy, all of the energy out of her, basically. And I'm not saying that has to be done all day, but there has to be some thought put into what exactly is going to happen. We just can't keep banning this place and banning, you know, dogs off leash in another place.
Your Cocker Spaniel, without, when you've been out and about, has it ever run up to anyone or jumped up on anyone or gone and barked at anyone or sniffed at anyone?
Yeah, she sniffed. She sees people coming and she goes wagging her tail. She'll get sort of fairly close to them, but she's not a jumpy uppy dog.
Yeah, do you get, Sinead, and listen, I'm with you to a certain extent, but you know yourself, the role and all that. But that's terrifying. Yeah. If that was my wee Hudson, he would, and I don't know where he got it from, that would fill him with fear. He might not want to go back there again if the dog came up and started sniffing at him. Well, though he's getting a wee bit better at it, by the way. Can I say, it's something you can work on, and which we are working on.
Take him down to my wee dog, Greg, get over that.
I'm not just taking it as a fait accompli. It is something he's very much improving on. But I just to use something that I find as relatable. So you see, your beautiful little Cocker Spaniel, who's very friendly, she's not a jumper and all that kind of stuff, it approaching someone can make them scared, Sinead.
Yeah, it can. And that's the reason why I'm saying if there are specific spaces put in place for dogs to be off leash, then that's going to solve both issues.
Yeah.
But there needs to be this thought put in place. I mean, dogs need to, if for nothing else, they need to have that energy run out of them. Because I think the most popular dog in Ireland is a Labrador.
Mm.
Then you're looking at things like Golden Retrievers, Cockapoos, which are, but anyway, and Cocker Spaniels and German Shepherds. But they all are really energetic dogs. A lot of them are working dogs. You know, anybody who has a collie knows that they need to be working and exercising regularly. But, I mean, if I didn't do that, if none of us did that with our dogs, all us responsible owners, we would have our neighbours knocking on the door nonstop because there'd be excessive barking. They might be, when they're on leash, then become aggressive towards other dogs, which might then frighten people more. There has to be some thought put in place, was my point. You can't keep calling for people just to, you know, put your dogs on a leash, put your dogs on your leash everywhere.
I mean, at the moment, you have to have control of your dog. It doesn't have to be on a leash in public, okay? But, you know, the park, you need it on a leash, or at least people. The beaches are the same now, and we've so many beaches. I do feel for dog owners who might get dirty looks just by walking the dog on the beaches and then public roads and what have you. So where safely can you go? Mm-hmm. Do you find now there's an attitude towards dog owners by non-dog owners, if you know what I mean? By simply having a dog, people are almost judgmental of you in public, if you know what I mean. I don't mean in private, Sinead.
I have to be I have to be honest, I haven't found that.
Okay.
But then again, you see, my dog will come to you, I've really worked on it since I got her, I rehomed her, and I've really, really worked on it. And she had fairly good recall before, you know, when she came to
me.
But I've worked on it to the point where she is, as soon as I call her, she comes back to me. And if I saw someone who might look like they're, I'm constantly have my eye on my dog when she is off leash. If I saw someone was looking a little bit uncomfortable or especially people who might be walking a tiny little puppy on a leash or something like that, I'm immediately calling her back because you want to be sure that you're not worrying people.
Mm-hmm.
But no, most people, to be perfectly honest, they're, oh, look at the doggy, isn't she lovely, you know? And actually, it's really, really good for socializing for people as well. Because, I mean, we have our own wee regular sort of people that you meet out on the, you know, who happen to get the same time of day, they have their own dogs and you get chatting to them. And you know, it's a really good socializing thing for humans as well. Put some thought into where these dogs are going to go, because you can't just keep putting these bans in place.
Well, what do you suggest? What do you suggest?
Well, the councillors who are calling for putting dogs on leashes elsewhere, they need to be the people proposing to put a specific dog park space in the areas that they're calling for this for.
Yeah.
To be perfectly frank. There has to be some joined up thinking here. We can't just keep saying no, let's ban dogs. You know, it's going to be ban dogs from this space and put them on a leash here. That can't keep happening because reasonably, not all of us, I don't know very many people who have acres and acres and acres so that we can even just, you know, throw a ball and let the dog, you know, have a good, decent run of the ball. Mm-hmm. That's not the case for most people, you know, and most of us are really responsible owners who really want the best for our animals. And so therefore, yeah, my dog is going to be off.
What about dog-friendly hours in parks? Would that be a compromise?
Possibly, but then that's not going to suit everybody.
Nothing's going to suit everybody.
Yeah, but if there was a specific space for dogs, that people know that this space is for dogs and dogs are going to be off leash, and it's a secure area, then everybody going into that space knows exactly what they're going in for.
A caller says, "I would have thought before you get a dog, especially a dog that needs a lot of exercise, that you would have considered having a large outdoor area in your home. It's the owner's responsibility. But if that were to follow through, there'd be no one in an urban area with the dog because, I mean, obviously exactly. in rural areas, some people are blessed with a lot of space, but you don't have to go terribly urban before, obviously, that space shrinks. So if you follow that logic through, there'd be no dogs in urban areas at all." I understand where the person's coming from.
Absolutely. And I mean, look, it's not to say I have a small garden. I don't have a particularly huge garden, but I don't have a particularly small one either. I have enough space to keep my dog safely and securely and where, you know, she can go out and have a sniff and all of those kind of things. I can put her on a leash for if I was walking along a road or, you know, where there's going to be cars because she's no traffic sense. But that regardless, the dog needs to be off leash, and the vast majority of us do not have that. So unless you're talking about banning any dog that needs an excess of an hour and definitely needs some off leash for the people in Ireland, what are you going to do?
Yeah, there's some breeds need an awful. I think those husky dogs, for example, they kind of look like husky. They need a ton of exercise. There's some breed, and there was a massive explosion of them a number of years ago. They need a ton of exercise. Sinead asks a caller, would you worry about other dogs off the leash attacking your dog when she's so small?
Not really, no, because the vast majority of people, if their dogs are off, now, if it was a dog loose and there was no visible owner around it, maybe. Mm. And it would, honestly, it would depend on the size of the dog and the breed of the dog. But if there's an owner that's visibly with that dog, not really, no. I wouldn't be worried about it.
Callers, and the tone of a number of texts, if I were to sort of amalgamate them all, is that pretty much everywhere you can take your dog without putting it on a lead because be it parks or public areas or beaches, it's overrun with dogs that aren't on leads, a lot of callers are saying. You know, as I say, that's a mishmash of them all. So there's no problems at the moment then.
There's no problems at the moment. And I mean, my dog's off leash. But again, my dog's under effectual control, so it's not illegal. You know,
of course
she has really good, she's really good recall. But my problem was that everywhere is calling for leashes, leashes, leashes. That is not the only way to control a dog. Mm-hmm. It might make people feel secure, but it's not the only way to control a dog at all. And I mean, as I said, look, leashes, sometimes what you tend to find is some dogs, when they're put on a leash, because they feel trapped, because they maybe feel like they're being held back and they don't have the full range to be able to protect themselves if something happens, mm-hmm. when they meet another dog, then that's when they become aggressive, and then they are only leash aggressive, and there may be placid, gentle dogs when they're off leash. You know, I'm not saying she's like that, she's not, but there are dogs like that. So there needs to be, my whole point was, look, if you're calling for places, all these places to have leashes, then make sure that there are places, public places, where dogs can go to socialize, they can become acquainted with other dogs, they will become, you know, less scary for everybody. You know, if a dog's well socialized and is, it's not going to be barking, it's not going to cause a ton of problems for anybody else, including the dog owners themselves, you know. But yeah, that was my whole point.
Yeah, and I think it's a good point. And it's a conversation. It is a conversation we have to have because we could find ourselves being no county for old dogs, you know. So we have to be careful. All right. And I say, too, I don't think it's fair if dog owners then feel as if everyone's jumping on them when we do know the majority are very responsible.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And look, you know, dog friendly is a good thing too to have for our tourism market as well. So any you know, dog friendly is a great thing. So yeah, there's a lot of people and they want to take the dogs with them if they're, you know, maybe coming from down the country somewhere and they want to come up to Donegal for a weekend or a week. They want to be taking the dogs with them. So we need to have these things thought through and put in place and not this half-assed, you know, just put dogs on leashes everywhere. It's not going to work.
Sinead,
you know,
thanks for your time.
And it's visibly not working.
Okay, all right, appreciate thanks, it. Take care. Get involved in that conversation, 08660 25000. Dog owners, says the listener, must have responsibility for their dogs. There's no need to have dogs on blue flag beaches at times they're not supposed to be there. It's all about compromise and taking responsibility. Dog owners need to have respect for fellow walkers and children. There's a lake in Ballybuffet that people take their dogs to. They let them off the leash and the dogs run after farmers' sheep. They should be kept on a leash. Another, dogs on Rathmullen Beach all summer. They're not allowed on the beach, says a listener there. And there are more dogs on the beach than ever. There is nobody to do patrols, which is a problem. So the tone of our texts coming in as we're speaking to Sinead and keep them coming into us are that, you know, actually, really, we need more enforcement of where we're at than less. But I think Sinead's is a good point in that, well, where do you go to exercise your dogs? Maybe there should be some designated areas. What do you all think? 086 60 25000. I'm just looking at cute images of dogs here while I was listening to Sinead. Don't own a dog. I did. I used to. But anyway, 086 60 25000 is the WhatsApp and text number. 086 60 25000, or give us a call on 074 91 25000. Right, OK, continuing our coverage of the Children's Disability Network teams across Donegal. And a bit of digging shows us that there are, because we knew there were some vacancies, but how many? 36 vacant positions within Donegal's three Children's Disability Network teams. The areas with the most are speech and language therapy, occupational therapy, physiotherapy and psychology. There are three teams in the county, by the way. Donegal North CDNT, which of course includes Inishowen, Donegal East and Inishowen CDNT, and then Donegal Southwest CDNT. Parents with children trying to access those services were told that there simply isn't the staff to do what they might want to do. Almost 7 staff required in occupational therapy. Just over 5 staff in physiotherapy, 7.4 staff, and it's whole job equivalents, all right, so 7.4 sounds strange, but hopefully you understand what that means. Speech and language therapy, 7.4 vacancies, psychology, 5 vacancies, social work, 3 vacancies, social care, 3 vacancies, nursing, 1 vacancy. And yesterday we were speaking to people who are from the county, but studied across the water or in Northern Ireland. And A, they are of the mind that they can't go through this CORU system, whereby it is a very, very convoluted, red tape-ridden system whereby people's qualifications, they're working away in Northern Ireland, in Derry, and living in Buncrana, for an example, but they can't come and work in Buncrana because their qualification is not recognised. And we heard from one person yesterday, the hoops that you have to jump through, the paperwork, is enormous. And then you get a sense that no one's actually processing this application. Gemma is a family CDNT rep in Inishowen and joins us on the programme now. And thank you very much, Gemma, for joining us.
Thank you.
Right, okay. So, it's okay. Gemma, are you okay to speak or do you need a second?
No, I am, yeah.
So you are of the view that this CORU is a really, really significant problem in filling these vacant posts?
Yeah, for all the reasons you just said. Do you know, like, I live in Buncrana myself. I trained as a nursing midwife in the north, and I ended up having to change my qualifications over to on the NMBI down here, and that was a convoluted process in itself. So I understand kind of why people aren't going that route and how long it can take. It's also, we're in the middle of a cost of living crisis, and especially that young girl you were speaking to yesterday morning. There are 4 universities in Ireland that offer both OT and speech and language therapy courses as a degree. And they're in Dublin, Cork, Galway and Limerick. So the cost of living crisis, if you live up here and that's what you want to do, there are a lot of people who just simply couldn't afford that. You know, the fees, the cost of rent and everything else. And then there's one in Derry that you can drive to from here. So there's, you know, the problem's not getting any smaller. you know, it's not a short, there's no short term fix here.
It's going to take a complete overview of qualification recognition, or at least the process for recognising those qualifications. And as well, too, in that response, the HSE sent out two links to show where the jobs were being advertised. One of them, there was one job. There's apparently 36 jobs, but on the HSE's own website, there was one single job advertised. And then there's a link to a Facebook page where many of the jobs are advertised. But if you aren't on that Facebook page, you simply don't know those jobs are there.
The other thing is as well, and you know, there is a requirement with Cory. If you do your degree here for, say, speech and language therapy, you graduate proficient in something called dysphagia, and they require that as something that you have to have in order to get on their register. What happens is the UK and elsewhere in the world, that's a postgraduate specialty, and they don't do that as an undergraduate degree. So you're asking people as well. They've gone and they've done their degrees in Northern Ireland or in the UK, and they've worked in the NHS for years, and you're asking them to come back here. You're asking them to do a postgraduate qualification out of their own pocket, in their own time, which isn't relevant to their scope of practice, just so that they can get on the register, so that they could maybe, you know, be able to apply.
And some of that is very specialist stuff, isn't it? It's swallowing movements and stuff like that. That people can specialise in that, but they're being asked to already have the qualification for that before they can be employed here, which is not required in Britain and Northern Ireland or elsewhere, which, again, is a further barrier to employment.
Yep. So if you have somebody who's working, as you say, most of these people are working in the NHS and Derry or wherever, and they're coming home from working the full day of the week, and you're asking them to take time out of their own time to do a postgraduate qualification that's not necessary for their practice. Like, I can guarantee you that I wouldn't do it either. Do you know?
Yep. So we know now there's 36 vacancies in the Children's Disability Network teams. With the current setup, I can't see how we could even begin to make inroads in filling those positions and giving families the hope that their children will start getting the interventions they need.
Until these barriers with Cory are overcome, there is really no short-term solution for it, to be honest, and I can't see it either. And, you know, the jobs are advertised there, but there simply aren't people to fill them. There aren't people who the HSE can employ, and until then, you know, our kids are leaving out on. The other aspect of that is we now have this situation where the services are so short in the CDNT network that private speech and language therapists, private OT therapists, are actually closing their books because they have too many patients to be able to accommodate. So even if you were in the position to avail of those services, you know, you can't, because they can't take on anybody new.
So even that one pathway, if you were lucky enough to beg, steal and borrow to do it for the better of your child, if you can and many can't, even that's now becoming a problem.
Yeah, because they have too many people. There's too many people trying to access, go down that route, because there is no alternative. Do you know, my son is 4.5, so they talk about early intervention, and everyone's very familiar with Keith Duffy and the work he's done into autism, and his daughter is incredible. But that, again, is because she got the therapy at the right time from the right people. So, like, my son is running out of time. I simply don't have, you know, that course in McGee is great, but it's 3 years before we're going to get anybody out of that, potentially. So my son hasn't got 3 years to wait for that to become available. And that's, there's so many other kids as well. The other side of it is there are so many kids waiting to get in to that system. There are so many kids waiting to get in to get that initial assessment and get, like, diagnosed, and they have no voice. And the whole point of it is, if we lose more staff in the interim, are we going to have to stop doing diagnostic assessments? Are we going to have to stop, you know, is that process going to stop? Are we just going to get completely hemmed in? And when is it that somebody, the HSE or government, is actually going to take this into hand? You know, we all work through a pandemic, we all live through it, and money was found just to throw at things. And it seemed to be a never-ending pot. Why can't now? This isn't just a Donegal issue. It's not just an Inishowen issue. It's not a Donegal East issue. It's not a Donegal North issue. This is a national issue.
What we've done with people like yourself, Gemma, and we're heading towards News at 10, though, we've identified a very serious problem. When we've spoken to an awful lot of people who are very heavily impacted by this, and the poor children who aren't getting the chances that they deserve, we've also identified the problems, and I think to some extent we're starting to identify solutions as a group of people in the community, us and the likes of you, Gemma, and others who've been involved in this conversation. There's not an awful lot more we can do. We've got the problem.
We've found
the areas that need to be looked at. That's very important. Now what we need is someone to do something about this.
Exactly.
Okay. Gemma, thanks for your time. Thank you. I appreciate it greatly. Okay, so as I say, we can't do much more, can we? As a collective here, I don't mean us at Highland, I mean us as a collective here. We've got the problem. We've identified the problem. We've identified the people of its effect. And we've begun to look at ways that it can be resolved. We just need someone to do this for our children.